It's really essential to wear masks. And for this to work, we have to have like 90% of people wearing a mask in public in the hotspot areas.
Trying to convince people to wear a mask. It's Tuesday, July 14th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, all at VOA Asia. Also ahead, creative work gets stores open again. A major city makes social reforms. Reality versus political polls. Young people work for a better world. Playtime for homeless kids. It's all on today's VOA Asia. With more than 3 million cases and over 137,000 deaths, COVID-19 is taking a heavy toll on the United States as the number of new infections continues to rise. As VOA's Kane Faribault reports, encouraging people to wear masks is becoming a widespread effort throughout the country that could help control the spread of the virus.
At Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin, fans of IndyCar racing gathered by the thousands for the first publicly accessible event since the coronavirus pandemic closed racetracks across the country. Masks were encouraged, but not mandatory.
Yeah, it's one of the best tracks in the world. So they're taking the precautions. Everyone else is taking precautions. I had no concerns about coming out.
All the staff and drivers and everybody are wearing masks, but I don't think the fans are quite as good about that.
In Florida, one of the states experiencing a surge in new COVID-19 cases, the popular Disney World Resort opened its gates to visitors for the first time in months, with a mandatory mask-wearing policy for most areas of the theme parks.
To the data we have right now, there's no downside to wearing a mask.
U.S. Assistant Secretary for Health Admiral Brett Giroir emphasized masks could prevent further spread of the virus, especially in areas where COVID-19 is on the rise.
It's really essential to wear masks, and for this to work, we have to have like 90% of people wearing a mask in public in the hotspot areas. If we don't have that, we will not get control of the virus.
After weeks of resisting, President Donald Trump wore a mask publicly for the first time while visiting service members and healthcare workers at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in suburban Washington, D.C.
I think when you're in a hospital, especially in that particular setting where you're talking to a lot of soldiers and people that in some cases just got off the operating tables, I think it's a great thing to wear a mask. I've never been against masks, but I do believe they have a time and a place.
In an online question and answer session from 10 Downing Street in London, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson hinted at tougher restrictions throughout Britain as new legislation in Scotland made masks mandatory in shops.
But face coverings, yes, we increasingly think that we've got to be very insistent on, you know, in places, in confined places where you're meeting people that you don't normally come into contact with, transport, shops, wear a face covering.
Medical experts say wearing a mask isn't the only important measure that could stop the spread of infection.
You really got to stop the bars. You've got to decrease restaurant capacity. You've got to physically distance. We have to have people wearing a mask in public. It's absolutely essential. And you've got to use good hand hygiene.
Measures Admiral Giroir and other health officials across the United States hope will curb infections in the country that set records for the most new COVID-19 cases in a single day, several times over the last week. Kane Faribault, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. New COVID cases complicate U.S. military missions in Japan and South Korea. How discovery of fresh water bolsters China claims in disputed sea. China announces sanctions against U.S. lawmakers over Uyghur issue. Confessed gunman in New Zealand mosque shootings to represent himself in sentencing hearing. Top White House advisor expects tough action on TikTok and WeChat. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more on our social media. That's Facebook at VOA Asia, also Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter, and you can stop by the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. When the coronavirus outbreak began, many retail stores were forced to shut down to help contain the virus. Some have since filed for bankruptcy. Others are starting to reopen, and trying to offer a good shopping experience even during the pandemic. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
It's a crucial time for retailers who are trying to recover from the worst sales slump on record due to the coronavirus. Retailers are trying to lure customers back and working to ensure they enjoy the experience of shopping, even with restrictions to contain the spread of the virus. Melissa Gonzalez is a retail consultant.
You can buy something, and buying is very transactional, but shopping is an emotional experience. So how do you still give people that satisfaction?
Many retailers are making employees wear masks, cleaning public areas, adding plexiglass shields by cashiers, limiting the number of customers in stores, and putting up signs reminding shoppers to keep 6 feet apart. Kathy Hilt is a vice president at Macy's department store in New York City.
What hasn't changed are the people behind the masks. You can feel and see that smile behind the mask, and you can feel that warmth. And just learning about social distancing and seeing the plexi at the registers is going to feel a little different, but that experience is going to feel exactly the same.
Instead of letting customers sample makeup, Macy's employees at the cosmetic counter are showing drawings of what the makeup looks like. Ulta Beauty has a phone app that lets customers virtually try on lipstick and other beauty products. Eileen Zeismer is with Ulta.
Our associates are taking daily wellness checks before the start of every shift. They're required to wear facial coverings throughout the store at all times. And, of course, they're practicing social distancing throughout the store as well.
After months of lockdown, some New Yorkers are starting to venture out to stores.
It just feels great getting out the house. You know, doing the normal things that women do, go shopping.
It feels okay, but I'm still nervous about being around people. I'm afraid, still.
As people get used to the new normal in some states, a spike of new coronavirus infections has forced other states to reverse their move to reopen business, adding more disruptions to a retail industry. Mark Hamrick, economic analyst with Bankrate.com.
We've seen a number of essentially troubling signals from retailers, whether it's bankruptcy filings or announcements on store closings.
Apparel brand Brooks Brothers is the latest to file for Chapter 11, a form of bankruptcy protection this week, joining other big-name brands of American retailers, including Neiman Marcus, J. Crew, and JCPenney. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, the funeral service for Seoul Mayor Park Woon-soon, who apparently took his own life after being accused of sexual harassment, was held Monday despite a petition against the city-run ceremony signed by a half million people. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the death of George Floyd, while in police custody earlier this year, has led to widespread protests over racial justice and also calls to defund police departments and divert that money to social programs to help reduce crime. In New York City, the mayor has already responded to these calls, as VOA's Anshuman Apte reports.
Protesters in New York are calling for the so-called defunding of the New York City's police department. They are part of the nationwide Black Lives Matter movement, calling for an end to what they say is the racial profiling of African Americans and the alleged use of excessive force at the hands of police.
Over the last 50 years, we've seen reductions in funding from education. We've seen reduction in funding from housing. We've seen reductions in funding from healthcare. We've seen reductions in funding for all of the things that actually keep us safe and keep us out of poverty. And we've seen an increase in funding of the carceral state and the system of policing that criminalizes black and brown lives and keeps us harmed and keeps us in danger.
The death of George Floyd in Minneapolis became the latest flashpoint for those who say the police, as they are currently structured, are part of the problem.
It has been a racially oppressive system from the very get-go. So I think in order for there to be change, that has to be broken all the way down and recreated and restructured from the ground up.
In response, New York City has passed a number of reforms, including measures to ban chokeholds and allowing people to film police activities. The number of new recruits joining the force will also be reduced. Mayor Bill de Blasio has decided to cut New York Police Department's funding by about $1 billion and redirect some of the money to community welfare. But some lawmakers object to the more radical demands, such as disbanding the police department completely.
I represent a community that has a high level of gun violence. I have a high level of gang activity. And so how do I go back and tell the seniors in my district or, you know, just your everyday hard work in New Yorker to have to wake up in the morning, you know, we don't need police. You know, we need to abolish old police officers. We'll be okay. We're going to figure this out. I can't tell half of my constituents that because that's not what they want to see. In fact, some of them want to see more police.
For many active duty officers from ethnically diverse immigrant communities, community policing is a better way to foster understanding between the police and the public.
As an immigrant, you're going out to your own community. You speak the same language. So when you become a victim of a crime and you're speaking to the victim with your own native tongue, it makes it easier for the victims to explain to you.
While reform critics say de Blasio's measures don't go far enough, police unions warn that reducing NYPD funds will create law and order challenges. But the city's council members say the reforms are a step forward to rectify the issues of police violence and racism that have created mistrust in the communities they serve. Aushman Apte, VOA News, New York.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. An Indonesian politician is under fire for ordering female civil servants to wear face veils once a week in what he claimed was a protective measure against the coronavirus. You'll find all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, public opinion polls reflect sentiment at a specific point in time. Even with the U.S. presidential election still 4 months away, polls can tell us a lot about the direction of a campaign and what it needs to do to win more votes. VOA's Steve Reddish helps explain what to look for in presidential poll numbers.
Political polls from reputable U.S. surveying outlets are showing former Vice President Joe Biden with a comfortable lead over President Donald Trump, both in national surveys and in critical battleground states.
It's pretty clear that the president is an underdog right now. He's a pretty severe underdog.
Last September, Biden was among more than 20 Democrats seeking his party's presidential nomination. Even then, in hypothetical matchups, Biden had a 9.5 percentage point lead on Trump in the Real Clear Politics poll average. The race tightened at the end of February after Trump's acquittal on impeachment charges, but before the impact of the coronavirus pandemic. Since then, Biden has rebounded to a nearly 9-point lead.
So what polls tell you is they tell you a baseline. They kind of give you a sense of how many people there are out there who are gettable for either candidate. And of course, as you get closer and closer to the election, the polls become more and more predictive. You know, a poll that
Jacob Rubashkin is a reporter and analyst for Inside Elections. He says polls are just snapshots of public opinion at a point in time, and events could occur before the November 3rd election that could change people's vote. The margin in the presidential race often percolates down to other elections, such as determining which party controls the U.S. Senate.
So a massive Biden lead nationally translates into a narrow Biden lead in some of these Republican states. And as a Democrat running for Senate, if you tell yourself, well, all I need is to get the same voters that are voting for Joe Biden, that becomes a much more straightforward proposition because the fewer voters who are voting for President Trump that you have to get as a Democratic Senate candidate, the easier your path to election is going to be.
But polling is a scientific instrument that Rubashkin says is only useful if you know how it was conducted.
Live caller polling is considered the gold standard of surveying, and that's when a real person dials the number and picks up and reads a script and asks for answers. Most polls don't do that because it's expensive and it's time consuming. And a lot of polls are either online or they're robotic, called IVR, Interactive Voice Response. And while those polls are not trustworthy, they are a lesser standard in the polling community than our live caller surveys.
Also, political scientists check for how many people were surveyed. Fewer people mean a higher margin of error. In addition, there should be a balance of gender, race, geography, income, and education level.
And as it turns out, education in the 2016 election was one of the most significant predictors of who you voted for. The less educated people voted more for Donald Trump. The more highly educated you were, the more likely you were to vote for Hillary Clinton. And because a lot of those polls didn't wait for education, they potentially missed out on some hidden strength for Donald Trump.
Supporters of Trump point to 2016 when questions are raised that the president is lagging in the polls right now. And remember, in America's unique presidential electoral process, the president is elected based off the results of each state. Each state gets a certain number of electors in what is known as the Electoral College. And the person who receives 270 electoral votes wins the presidency. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
We continue with VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today. Amid the COVID-19 outbreak, a youth conservation corps has expanded its usual duties of planting trees and restoring natural habitats. Organizers say the program, based in Long Beach, California, provides job training and, during this pandemic, offers young people a chance to help. Michael Sullivan tells us more.
Members of the Conservation Corps of Long Beach, age 18 to 25, plant trees and beautify their community. 70 Corps members get job training and a salary. During the COVID crisis, they have also set up emergency medical testing centers and helped with food distribution.
We don't run away from emergencies. We run towards them to help people. This one was a little scarier because it's a virus and we want to make sure that our young people are safe.
This organization and others like it got their inspiration from a U.S. government program in the 1930s called the Civilian Conservation Corps, a jobs project during the Great Depression. Later programs provided job training for young people, funded by government and grants from corporations and foundations. These programs are important now, says the Long Beach Corps' executive director.
It's amazing how many young adults see the Corps as this opportunity to serve at this juncture in our nation when we need them the most.
Some of the Corps members are getting a second chance after trouble with the law, says a former member.
When I joined Conservation Corps, you know, I was still on probation. I was trying to figure out how to pay these probation fees and really just get some job experience. And really at the end of it, you know, I had my record expunged. I was in a full-on career and, you know, everything was in a full swing in the right direction.
After getting job training, he now works in the solar energy industry and serves on the Conservation Corps' board of directors. One Conservation Corps crew is building a barn, and the crew leader says it's rewarding.
2 days ago, when there was nothing built on the project we were at, but today, you know, 2 days later, we've already completed one section of the barn, and we're almost halfway done.
These urban conservation groups help beautify cities as well as rural spaces.
Urban forestry, community garden development, park space development, greening, recycling.
helping young people get skilled jobs or return to school or college while helping their community in a difficult time. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
VOA Asia continues. The main goal of the charity organization Playtime Project is to provide homeless children and those living in shelters with playrooms and fun activities. But with the COVID-19 lockdown, children don't have access to museums and parks like they did before. Maxim Moskalkov looks at how the nonprofit group is continuing to help children during this pandemic, years after it was founded.
Years ago, Jamila Larson heard that hundreds of children were living in homeless shelters in Washington, D.C., so she decided to see it for herself.
I really wasn't prepared for what I saw. I saw half-dressed children in the hallway with no toys, rows of metal bunk beds, sheets for doors, no screens on the windows. And I asked the woman giving me a tour, doesn't anyone ever donate toys, thinking that my coworkers and I could do a toy drive for the holidays. So I was told, yes, sometimes people donate toys, but we keep them in a closet so the kids don't make a mess. So that's when I learned that it wasn't actually going to be helpful for us to donate toys, that we literally needed to donate ourselves.
In 2003, Larson decided to help start a nonprofit organization called Playtime Project. It partners with homeless shelters to organize fun activities and playrooms for children. It's supported by private donations and the help of 200 volunteers a week.
Ultimately, we're trying to really stop the cycle of homelessness. Give these kids who are experiencing a variety of different stresses in their lives. For some of them, homelessness is not the only issue that they're dealing with. Some of them are dealing with domestic violence, a variety of different things. And so having an opportunity for them to have a space that they can kind of call their own, where they know it's safe, they know the people there care about them, they're able to kind of put their, you know, stresses aside and just simply be children and play.
Playtime Project offers about 700 homeless children games that help them learn and develop, and trips to museums, amusement parks, and baseball games. Participants say the nonprofit fulfills needs greater than many people know.
There are a lot of homeless kids in Washington, D.C. A lot of people don't even know half the stuff they go through. But these kids are very fortunate here. When I leave them there, I'm confident that one of these volunteers are going to talk to them about being whatever they want to be.
Kind of got my mind through it and, like, don't worry about it. I ain't never seen nothing like this before. We play football, flag football, basketball. We do math, science.
But since the COVID-19 lockdown in March, the children haven't had the same access to these resources and facilities. So Playtime Project made adjustments to help make sure the children continue to learn and have fun.
And to help parents purchase diapers or wipes or emergency food resources, meet some of those immediate needs.
But Larson says still more need help. She says of Washington's 6,000 homeless people, at least half include families with children. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia is the daily program you've been listening to. We thank you so much for joining us. You can continue by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and see us at YouTube. You can also stop by the voanews.com website and download our full-length 25-minute program. It comes to you courtesy of our managing editor, Diane Gao. And we also send our thanks out to our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Popeboon. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.